Hey there, welcome behind the bar on A Pint of Cthulhu with your host Jay and my co-host Matt. He's been demoted recently. And the Honorbound devs. Feel free to introduce yourselves.
Is it better just to make you guys sound crazy or not? Yes, my name is Jared. My name is Jared. I'm one half of the Honorbound development team. And to the lower left-hand corner on my screen is the other half.
Hey, for the first time ever, I think we might be in the same place when we point at each other, Jared. Are you upper right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, we tried.
Jared to the right, you down the bottom, Jay in the corner.
Well, I'm Will, and I think we're doing a wonderful job in making Matt and Jay sound like we're not really here.
I think we could do that enough on our own. So we'll ask the very first icebreaker question that we ask everyone we interview. And it'd be interesting to see how both of your answers differ on this one. But if you could say A Pint of Cthulhu was any type of drink, what would it be?
I came prepared for this. I knew this question. Oh. I knew this question was coming. I had to really search my soul. There is a drink in the Midwest from Chicagoland called Malort. For some reason, insanely popular. And it's one of those things like, oh, you gotta try Malort. And you will feel your soul leave your body. And then you'll probably get another one. Because it's just, it's awful. It's an awfully weird malt liqueur sort of wine thing. And it is absolutely disgusting. And it's a point of pride if you go to a Malort bar.
I've just Googled that and someone says it tastes like burning tires.
It's supposed to be licorice flavored pretty much.
That is not what it tastes like.
Oh. Right, Jay, put that on the list. We're going to get some of that.
Oh, no.
Oh. Good luck.
Oh, do you know what would be a great idea? You can edit this out if you want a map. But
go.
For the meetup in next year, we should find all the interviews, all the different drinks that people have said Pint of Pular, make
already
them.
Already on it.
Yeah, oh. There we go.
That's brilliant.
We've had some horrifying ones.
Oh, lots of stouts and a lot of absinthe. Which is never a good combination.
Well, what's your addition to this one then?
You know, I put some thought into this as well, and I'm going to join the stout train. Alas, I'm thinking something like a Russian Imperial, maybe barrel aged, but not just that stout. I'm pretty sure there is a shot of just straight fresh out of the sea water just dumped straight into it.
Well, that's a recipe to throw up, for sure.
Yep.
I'd try it.
I mean, we're 25 minutes away from the sea, Jay. I'll go and get you a bucket. Fine.
I don't think it gets more Cthulhu than that.
Straight seawater. Oh.
I mean, you could always just add calamari.
Ah, true. It does get more Cthulhu.
Oh, calamari in your beer. That would be a lifelong regret.
Keep it fresh.
Yes.
So, how about you guys tell us a bit about yourselves, what you're working on?
As soon as my stomach clears up here. So my name is Jared Leopold, and I started a company called Proxism by Design, which is really just my publishing company. A lot of my stuff is just under my name. Both are impossible to spell, so it's hard to find, but I've been into writing and doing role-playing stuff for about only 3 years, maybe four, I'm not quite sure. And a lot of it has to do with reaching out to Will and just being an admirer of one of the systems that he created. And so I think that's a really good segue. How about you, Will?
Yeah, well, I run my own little company that's officially just me called Gamonomicon. I'll join the crowd of folks with difficult to spell and search things, but at the time it seemed brilliant. It was like like the Necronomicon, like the Book of the Dead, so a book of games, the Gameonomicon. It seemed brilliant at the time. But yeah, so I'm working on some stuff with Jared, of course. A few of my own things. Actually, Jared and I have known each other for good gravy, nearly 20 years, at least 15. Yeah. I mentioned in passing the Game of Thrones card game podcast I used to do. We met competing at that card game umpteen years ago. And then, as often happens with really dedicated gamers, we start wanting to make some of our own stuff, thinking we can do it better. So, a few years back, dropped Party First, my first published game, kind of a 1980s pulp horror RPG thing. And along with a couple other systems I've put out SRDs for, I'm currently running a jam for the Tension engine, which is the engine that runs Party First and is underpinning Honorbound, which Jared and I are working on now.
If I'm not mistaken, you had that translated into Spanish?
I vaguely recall someone asking about that some years ago, but honestly, now that you say that, I forget if we ever actually completed that that project. But if you have seen it, we must have completed it.
Oh, no, I just remember you talking about it in your show.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. Fair enough, then.
Well, Jay, do you want to ask the first proper question, then?
Sure.
Sure. What inspired you to make your own TTRPG, aside from frustrations about Game of Thrones card games?
I don't even think it was frustration that inspired me exactly. I had gotten heavily into Game of Thrones. I don't want to just turn this into a Game of Thrones podcast, but, you know, we're talking 20 years of competing at regionals and worlds and all that sort of thing. So eventually it became essentially my entire, like, friend group and such were all gamers. And I was playing a variety of role-playing games with some of my Game of Thrones buddies. They're the ones that got me started on that. And kind of a small world sort of thing. There was some overlap with another friend group that had a couple people working on 7C 2nd Edition whenever that Kickstarter went up and all that kind of thing. So we had done a little discussion and testing and stuff with them. And that was kind of when it was like, well, wait a minute. Like, these are people I literally know that have, like, GM'd games I've sat down to play, and they're, you know, working on this gigantic Kickstarter. Maybe I could actually do something. Obviously, I've not hit that kind of range of anything. But, yeah, I think that was kind of the nugget.
Fair play. Anything to add? Jared?
For him? I don't think so.
For you, Jared.
Yeah. Sure. For me, it, I've just been playing role-playing games for the past 35 years or something like that. And so the college years did a ton of Dungeons and Dragons, got into that. And then I kind of went into the deep freeze. I started my own brick and mortar game store to sell stuff, which was awesome. Loved it. It's still around today. But that put a really big deep freeze on me playing anything after the card games. I just didn't want to be around that crowd while I was also running the store. It was a lot of trying to put on top of it. But then it was probably COVID, I would guess, that I'd been kind of doing role-playing games here and there, but I didn't really get back into it and realize how much I just really enjoy the medium of it. Like, it's one of my favorite pastimes to do. Period. I don't think there's anything else I'd rather do unless it's a really nice day and there's frisbee golf to be done, you know? And so, yeah, I reached out to Will and I was like, hey, you got the system, but I really like the Wombat Tension system. I think it's really cool. I've got a bunch of different ideas that I'd like to throw at the wall with you if you'd want to sit down and talk, because like I said, we had known each other for so long at that point in time. And Will was nice enough to be like, yeah, all right, we can tell me what you got. And I just was like, here's all this stuff. Here's all these different adventure ideas. Here's splat books. Here's all the stuff. And I was like,
Jerry's
okay,
enthusiasm,
I know it's a lot.
Is sky high.
And he was like, yeah, let's do a couple projects. The first couple little adventures went well. And then we worked on the Twilight War book together, which was the big book for Party First, so it's the only really big supplement to it. Had a lot of fun with that, and that was pretty successful for me anyway. Could definitely be bigger, but at the same time, for what we were doing and how much we put into it, fantastic. Then the next project after that was Will Gamonomicon published Goblin Market, which was my book. That was just solely my book that I wrote from top to bottom with rules, background, everything in it. And Will did the heavy lifting of layout, kind of art direction and all that stuff. And running the Kickstarter, which I still haven't officially ran my own Kickstarter yet, and it still scares me half to death to look at. But from then, it was really doing jams. Like, and just getting that little bit of encouragement, you know? Like, once you see something of yours out in the wild, like just one thing, all of a sudden it becomes, it's not an addiction, but it's like, oh, I can do this. I can make more. I can get more stuff out there. And I haven't looked back since, like, full-time dad. And then when I get the time, just write stuff. So that's my program, and I've been loving it ever since.
If I might add just one quick thing there to Jared, I just want to second the jam thing. There's such an awesome way to kind of feel some hype, to feel that accomplishment, to like get over that hump and start feeling like, oh, I could actually really do this. I think my first one was the one-page RPG jam a couple years back. And there's such an awesome community with that. And it's such a like achievable goal, I think. And so many like cool ideas come out of it from other folks. So yeah, jams are great.
That one is actually... Sorry, Jay.
I think that jam's been mentioned by someone else as well that we've had on in that review. I can't remember who it was, but I remember someone else was like, oh yeah, and the jam inspired by it.
More than likely, but off the top of my head, I can't remember right now.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, tell us...
Jay? Jared was talking first.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a one-page, that same one-page jam happens every year, and it's happening right now. Mm-hmm. I assume by the time this episode comes out, it'll probably be over, but there's a month left in it, and I would encourage anyone who's even interested in doing it on itch.io, just find a jam that you'll be comfortable with, and just do it. It gives you a deadline. Doesn't matter if it's fully exactly what you want. Having that deadline really helped me realize that I could maybe do it too. So it'll be just my last little push for jams. They're fantastic.
Agreed.
Might be definitely something to look into then. So, tell us about the one thing we are here today about, Honorbound. Tell us about that.
Could I start on Honorbound on this one? Because I think there's a little bit of a preface to it and how it kind of came about. Because Jared acknowledged he read Party First and kind of got hooked on that world and system and floated so many ideas. Jared, like, folks, he is a font of creativity, which is amazing. And we worked on several projects with that. And I admit, Jared's level of creativity compared to my level of like motivation at one point was pretty out of whack. And I was feeling pretty burnt out on Party First related stuff. And we started kind of kicking around. I've been looking at putting out that actual system as a resource doc so that anybody could tweak stuff and do whatever they want. So I said, well, hey, what if I go ahead and finish that document up and publish it? And then maybe we kick around ideas for a totally new project that uses that system, and maybe that'll kind of get my juices flowing and interest built up again. So honestly, we probably talked about it on our kind of podcast and video experience, Will and Jared Make a Game, regarding how we made the leap to the new theme. But I'll admit at this point, I don't recall. How did we... I do roughly recall, hopefully I'm not taking too much credit here, but I think I kicked out the... what about the Musketeers in Space idea? I think we were kind of just trying weird combos of two different like pop culture-y sort of things. Was there any more about how we got to that point, Jared?
Yeah. What I really like about this is that when you imagine like big brainstorm sessions, right? Like you throw everything out there and then you just like, then you disseminate and all that. That didn't really happen. You were like, well, I'm getting burned out. I'd rather work on a different project. I'm like, okay, not a problem. Let's work on a totally new thing. Great. Awesome. And it was, the choices were like Star Wars-esque sort of thing. A fantasy one, which we still need to do, or someone needs to do. We've got a lot of good ideas going with that. Or like the Three Musketeers. And I was like, okay, well, you know, honestly, I'm up for anything. I had pitched like a superhero kind of idea that when you use your powers, you slowly broke down, and so that built up the tension points to then something bad would happen to you when you use your superpowers, which still might be down the hopper at some point in time. But then when we got together with these ideas, like, okay, what do you like? What do you like? And it was like, oh, Three Musketeers. And it was like, well, I like the idea of being in space too, because we work with a lot of different things for sci-fi. We haven't worked in that element with this system yet, and that was it. Like, it was literally, I want to say it was a much bigger process than that, but it was not. It was like 15 minutes of talking on Discord, just typing back and forth. It wasn't even face-to-face. It was like, okay, well, how about just Musketeers in Space? Great. Boom. Let's do it. And then it became, the next conversation was like, I don't want to do Star Wars. That was the very next conversation. And then from there, that's how we've kind of worked our way into what the world is at this point.
Discord, the birthplace of many games.
The graveyard of even more.
Probably. Yeah.
So, just for those who are maybe less familiar with the tension system, would you mind going over that real quick?
Yeah, I feel like I should probably lead on that one, if that's okay, Jared.
Hey, it's your system, absolutely.
Okay, so the tension engine, which did not initially have that name when we created it for Party First, it just didn't have a name at all. But it kind of came about at the time with that group of buddies I was playing with. We were playing some D&D at the time, but we were also playing some 7C. We were, I think we had just come off of a World of Darkness game, I think Hunter, if I remember right. We were reading Monster Hearts, and we were kind of turning all of that type of stuff around in our heads, and wound up wanting to create something that felt kind of cinematic, and we had kind of hit on some of the horror beats lately with Hunter and Monster Hearts, and so that led us to looking at how can we do some of that horror type of feel we were looking at trying to create a system that gave us the feel of the pacing of like a horror movie, that type of thing. So one of the key things in the tension system, which is a D6 pool building game, became the actual tension pool as well, or and the associated tension breaks. So whenever it comes up that players do need to roll for something, they're going to be selecting an attribute and a skill, and then rolling that many dice equal to the total of their values in those. Then they're going to keep two dice out of that to actually be their pool here. Depending on their situation, whether they are going up against the environment, which is kind of a catch-all in the horror movie kind of scenario. That's somebody, say, trying to open their car door while the killer is slowly walking down the street toward them. But it could be conversations with kind of generic NPCs or whatever, things that are not statted out adversaries. The GM then is also rolling a pool of D6s, but this depends on whether they are going against a statted adversary or the actual environment. As players roll in the base system, as they roll ones, they're generating tension points, and that is going to be the total of the tension pool. So anything against the environment is going to be a pool the size of how many tension there are right now. So as players are trying harder and harder, theoretically, to open that car door, the tension pool is growing larger and larger. Now, of course, you're only keeping two out of that pool. Similarly with adversaries, they have their own stats. They're keeping, monsters might keep three, but because both players and GM are keeping two dice out of that, you can guess that the size of the pool starts mattering a bit less for strict totals. It's more and more likely that you can roll sixes. So the system then operates off of players generating adventure points, which can then be spent to keep more dice. Likewise, the GM can spend attention to keep dice. They can also be used for different abilities. I feel like I probably should have had an outline here, so I explained this in order. So I do apologize. That might have been a little all over the place here. But essentially, the tension engine name came from that flow. You're building your D6 pools. You are rolling them. Ones are generating tension, which are the GM meta currency, which are then spent back out. And the players are also potentially generating adventure points, which are spent back out, and the two just cycle back and forth in order to keep dice to power abilities, that type of thing.
Oh. Fair play. Anything to add, or?
Yeah, for me, what drew me to the system is that your points of conflict, whether it's directly like with an adversary fighting an enemy, trying to hack into a computer, trying to convince a consulate to overchange a law, all those points of conflicts were treated equally for the most part. So that meant you could sit down and have a whole session just based on going back and forth with social interactions. And it's going to be just as compelling and just as exciting for as your combat heavy sessions as well. That's what really got me on the hook with it, and I'm like, okay, this system you can do a lot with. And I wrote my first quote-unquote dungeon for Honorbound a couple months back, and what I loved about it is that it's a casino. So like, ooh, yes, a little bit of fighting, a lot of bluffing, a lot of like social interactions, like you get like a follower on leech type person that get a kind of get away without causing too big of a thing. Like, it's, I love it so much. And that's your whole session is going to be in the casino trying to fight off all these different encounters like that.
Oh,
Jared, I can't believe you didn't catch me on a really important thing I left out. Something that I know the two of us have talked about a bunch, especially when we had our kind of Ship of Theseus discussion about Honor Bound and, you know, how much can be changed before it is a separate system. And I argued that one of the key things to me that made the tension engine what it was, and then I just completely skipped it in my description just now. I really thought you'd catch me on that, Jared. The tension breaks. So, of course, I mentioned the kind of in and out flow of tension and adventure points and that type of thing. But I totally skipped over the other part of that initial kind of horror movie feel, which is as tension builds, of course you're getting larger pools and that type of thing, but once it hits a multiple of 10, it breaks and something, at least in the base stuff, something kind of randomly bad happens. In that we have a table, like a D6 table, that can dictate some of those bad things that happen, but it gives players kind of this sense of impending doom that they can kind of watch. Yes, they're powering up the GM as they go, but they also know, hey, we might be in the middle of a fight or in the middle of this social discussion or something, and suddenly, if we've pushed this too hard, suddenly, snap, something unexpectedly bad is going to happen.
I literally just explained this to someone on a different Discord this morning as, oh, it's your wandering monster table. Except instead of it being strictly monsters, it is difficulties. You know what scenario you're going to be in, whether it's going to be social or dungeon or whatever. And you have six different difficulties that can arise. And so then, yeah, there's your wandering monster. Like, you've failed enough to trigger this additional bad thing. And something that I've 100% ran into that I will repeat from now on as far as design goes, players thrive and love chaos. And so the more you can generate organically with them as playing, the more fun it's going to be for everyone.
Well, that leads on then to the next question of how do you go about world building in this game?
I'll let you lead on this one, Jared.
Yeah, great question. So we knew where to start with, right? And so then I just started watching as much Three Musketeers media that I could. Like, shows, movies, reading the books, all that stuff. So that's where I started from. And I'm going to catch a lot of hate for this, because I haven't seen the two new French movies yet, which I'm really excited to watch.
I hear they're really good.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it. But the Disney movie, strangely enough, is probably the best one, which I can't believe I'm saying that. But if you want to watch, yeah, I think that's more towards how the movies have been done and portrayed, I think. But if you want the best possible thing to get the best feel for Three Musketeers, the BBC show, Three Musketeers, from like 2017, something like that, perfect. Phenomenal. Watch that and you'll get a good feel. And then, so it started there, put it in space. We had a conversation on what kind of feeling we wanted out of it. So this was a lot of the world building goals was kind of put up front, and we wanted to have it be hopeful. We didn't want it to be a huge drag. The conflicts are going to arise naturally. And so what I did for the history was like, okay, let's start with a place that was really, really bad. So the company wars happened. Pretty much everyone was enslaved. And then there was an uprising to shut down the companies. So now we're in this rebuilding process that has already been a ways, but we're still far away from it being over. So we created a loose confederacy called the Grand Alliance. And Will named that. So we've got the Grand Alliance, and then now we literally just added another part, because you can't be a friendly government if you force everyone to join the Grand Alliance. So there's naturally got to be people who be like, you know what, I don't want to be part of this confederacy. I'm going to be a free city state. We can take care of ourselves. And the Alliance is like, great. As long as you don't do these four rules, and I did a bunch of research on the UN, actually. So we're trying to create these really, idealistic ideas, right? These idealistic living things where it's agrarian, we share all the resources and all that stuff. And let's focus on our adventure being on the cultural differences between two societies trying to blend together. And then also, it's set in the future, let's have some mindless beasts thrown in there too. Let's have some planet exploring. Let's have some leftover old dungeons, right? That can be left over when technology existed. We knew we didn't want to have like teleportation. We knew we didn't want to have intergalactic travel with like black holes and stuff like that. So we basically said, we're going to have all that stuff already have happened. Then something has to happen to take all that stuff away. So, yes, we have internet. We have now a way to travel through the internet to get to someplace else. So there's a little bit of teleportation, which I haven't told Will yet. So that might be on the next episode.
I was just thinking, wait a minute, when did that happen?
So that may or may not still exist by the time this comes out, but that's what I'm shooting for. And so, yeah, we want it to be sci-fi. In where we got down to the world building that I'm most excited about was the stuff that we didn't create. And this was a conversation that Will and I went back and forth a ton, and I cannot emphasize how much we talked about this. Do you want to take over this part where we talk about species?
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you were going that way or stuff that got cut. But yeah, the species thing. So that was definitely something we went back and forth on a lot. And even inadvertently, we discussed a good chunk of it in the wrong Discord channel. So actually, Brett, who was the co-creator of Party First back in the day, actually weighed in on some of this discussion with us initially as well. Basically, what it kind of came down to was trying to be somewhat mindful. It's a pretty hot button topic, I think, in the RPG scene over the last few years about the concept, or at least terminology, of races, right? It, coming up a lot in D&D and various other fantasy games who I think are more or less quickly or slowly here moving to other terminologies, you know, ancestry and things like that, and trying to separate some of those concepts. But the thing is, we were doing a sci-fi game, and like I said when Jared and I were talking about this, is like, you say sci-fi to me and I mean, aside from spaceships, like the second thing that comes across to me are aliens, right? And I couldn't find a way to let go of that concept completely. And we talked about several different things. We're already in this kind of post-apocalyptic sort of era, so we talked about addressing it with just kind of like really flexible, kind of like nanotechnology customization. Everybody's human, but they can look and do whatever they want because they just have the bots, you know, tailor their body however. And in the end, that just still didn't quite fit right for the flavor. And so we came back around on truly aliens, and eventually we also kicked around, you know, are there mechanical benefits or not? In some discussions, you know, there are arguments for or against. We wound up settling on calling them species and really trying to embrace that as a more kind of scientific term. I mean, these are, in our world, different species. The Othen and the Harven are not reproducing together. They are not biologically compatible in the same way. I was just going to try to kind of wrap that thought there to say, so in the end, we settled on something that is largely cosmetic and flavor fluff, no mechanical basis. Different societies, different kind of worldviews and outlooks in their societies, but something that we felt after a lot of kicking it back and forth honors the kind of idea of aliens in sci-fi, but hopefully avoids some of the pitfalls that could be fallen into.
And I think the way that we put that together that's really going to work is that we're going to give like a page for each species. Here's the background, here's kind of how they look, here's the range of what they can look, and then the part that I'm really proud of that we put together is building into the experience points is that, so you just have this page, that's it. Now, every time that you yourself, the player, add something to the culture of the species, like a holiday or a ceremony that they do, or like how they treat the dead, is their marriage, like you get an experience point for doing that, and then you get that once per session. So we're actively encouraging you to build out your species culture. And what's fun about that, I think, is that it's going to be different than from different playgroups to different playgroups, because they're going to envision their cultures or species a little bit differently. And I think this, honestly, for me, is how I'm going to design all questions of culture and species moving forward for a lot of my games, I think. I'm just so happy with that, honestly.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was a great inspiration on your part, Jared. And I think has led to recent discussions that we recorded about earlier this week, actually, about kind of trimming content back and like what's exactly the right point to kind of still sketch out these different cultures and different species and, you know, various other things in the game as well, but what's the right point to sketch out and leave, you know, just kind of opening questions, open the can of worms so that players can take all of those kind of experience prompts and customize it to their own table, their own group.
Yeah,
that seems like it'd be really good for unique character backstories, really building on, like, because a lot of games, D&D especially, is kind of bad for this. It's very stock fantasy, so if you get a dwarf, they are this. If you get an elf, they are that. And once you've created your character, that's your character. They're not really, they might have character development, but you're not going to really have anything new or different about them a lot of the time. So that seems like that system you've come up with is a great way to add to your character without revising previous things.
Yeah, and I hope people run with it, because I think the original question was about world building, and that's just what we want to give you, the guidelines, right? So by giving you experience points by building your own world, because we're also going to do stuff like we want three musketeers. So you know what the other thing you can get experience points? Expressing courtly love. And there's like five different things that you can do to express courtly love to gain experience points while you're playing. We also are all about some three musketeers. So you have to have interactions within your own group to build it stronger. You can get an experience point for doing that. So what I'm finding for the world building is to put it more into the player's hands and also express how we want the game to be played. And hopefully that's why you bought the game in the first place. Like, hey, these are themes that we want to explore, you know?
Sounds good. Cool. So what challenges did you face during the development of your game? You mentioned, I think earlier, about stuff getting cut. So what kind of things ended up getting trashed? What was difficult to deal with?
You want that one, Jared?
Sure. we're in the process right now of just hacking away stuff. At the very beginning, we were like, all right, 60 pages.
let's shoot for 60 pages. So part of it was the species. Will, once he gets on a roll, very eloquent writing. And it's wonderful to read, and great historic backgrounds. So he did three or four of the species, and they're about 5 or 6 pages long, each of them. And that's on a Google Sheet page, you know? So if you translate that to another page, that's a lot of information. So we're cutting that. The hardest part for me for The Darling to Kill is I originally wanted to build this as three musketeers, and each playing group was their own like house that you belong to, and your house grew in prestige as your group did bigger and bolder things, and so then you'd compete with each other to get favor to join the Grand Alliance as your own major house. And at the end of the day, like, there's 40 pages, 30 pages of rules written for that. And it all got cut just like 2 weeks ago. And it pains me so much. But I'm like, you know what? This is the core game. I think let people play with the core game to have it to really feel to stand on its own. Because it's got enough rules. I don't want to bog any people down. Now, I'm not saying if later on you want to explore that. If there's maybe another book, maybe, possibly, that, you know, that might have.
I mean, there's a couple other things, I think, that wind up getting cut, you know, specific, like space travel and vehicle rules and stuff. You know, some of these other bigger scale sort of things that, I think they could conceivably work together in another book if there was need for that.
So it smells like there's a sequel on the wind.
Well, this one's even done.
Yeah, let's see if people like the first one. Let's start there.
So, with what you haven't cut, how have you managed to balance all of the mechanics against each other?
Jared's been running the playtest games, so I think that question is definitely him.
Yeah, playtest. So we wanted to do sci-fi. We didn't want it to be Star Wars, but we ended up really wanting to have religion as a factor in the game. And we also wanted some sort of space force thing. Honestly, the hardest thing that we've had to do during this whole process was name what the force is going to be called. That by far was the hardest thing. We settled on.
I should clarify, when Jared says space force, he means capital F force, a little bit like Star Wars, not Space Force like a military unit sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so we ended up calling it Essence, and through playtesting we had to balance a lot of things of like, all right, so you've got your physical stats, you got your social stats, you've got your intellect stats, and then you've got your like kind of mysticality sort of stuff to work with that. And it's been all about playtesting, to try and figure out what's going to be too powerful, what's not going to be powerful enough. My favorite mechanic that got to work, and I'm leaving it in for right now, is a time traveling mechanic, where if you choose the seer, each profession you choose gets once per session or once per saga ability, and the seer is, they saw the future. And so anytime while you're playing, this character can be like, you know what? No, stop. That's not what happened. What actually happened is that we did this. So you just play along as if nothing was going on. And if something like truly tragically bad happens, the seer can be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Nope, 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 nope. We're going to back up one scene and we're going to start over again. The penalty is, though, you can't make the same roll. That's usually when you're going to do it, because you just totally fail a roll. You can't do the same roll type. You have to do something completely different. Because you saw doing that would be disastrous, so now you can try and do this thing. Playtesting that was awesome. It was totally bizarre, but it was a lot of fun, and it wasn't as broken as you'd think it would be. Like when the bad guy rips off their mask or whatever, like the bad guy, it's still going to be a big moment. You know,
But then they're like, well, I stabbed the guy. And I was like, well, we've got rules to deal with that, so let's play it out. And so far, it's been a lot of fun, but it's really has come down to playtesting a bunch. And I've got an actual play of that that's I'm going to be posting here pretty soon. And I'm going to start a new playtest session where it's going to be the Revenge of the Aeronauts. So using kind of like the space stuff where it's going to be like airships, open deck airships sort of stuff. And there's going to be witches to get your mystical effects. There's going to be a thing from outer space that's threatening the planet. There's going to be civil war of these free city states. And I think I can get all that done like in four or five adventures, I think. So it's all part of the world building, and the playtesters have been fantastic giving this a chance to do it. So balancing, it's impossible because there's like 60 or 80 abilities that you can choose from your different professions. And we're just trying to get it as close as possible at this point. So I'm sure once it gets out there in the wild, there'll be something. I don't know.
Well, if I might add just a little bit of flavor to that. I know it's something we've talked about. Admittedly, we've talked about it more in regards to experience and that type of thing. But I think it applies across the board as well to attempting to balance abilities, stats, you know, all the rest of that. In that, really, balance, I think, is probably a pipe dream, so to speak. We're not gonna really get there, but the question I think that's more achievable is it fun for everybody? I mean, in a really strict, you know, number to number to number comparison, is everything exactly the same? We're probably not gonna hit that. But even if somebody's ability that does this has fun when they do that, and somebody that's ability does this, you know, that's lower, but they have a lot of fun when they do that. Like, that is the balance to me, is equal amounts of fun.
That makes really good sense. Because even the bigger, like, Cold Cthulhu deity, they aren't balanced. They really aren't balanced. There are classes and there are, like, resources that you can take that are just trash. But people still play them because they're fun.
Yeah, the hardest one for me was trying to balance out the diplomat profession, because we've got a diplomat and we've got a bounty hunter, like, that are in the same group, you know, with two vastly different skill sets, right? Just introduced this mechanic, which I can't believe we haven't been using it before, to make things better. Because if you get into a fight, the diplomat's not going to be much help. If they get into a debate, the bounty hunter's not going to be much help. So we introduced the idea of, because there's three musketeers, we're using these points called unity points. You can spend a unity point, which are fairly rare. Like, you can't do it all that often during a game. Maybe like four or five times as a shared pool. So everyone in your group four or five times total for the whole session can do this. Is that you can borrow an ally of yours that's in the same scene. You can borrow their skill number. So for one shot, your diplomat can shoot with his gun almost as good as the bounty hunter. But the diplomat's like core attributes are going to be lower than the bounty hunter's, but they get to use the bounty hunter's skill at least. So they have one good shot at least. So at no point in time should anyone ever feel useless.
So what do you guys, each of you, think is the best and then the worst part of making the game for you guys? Most enjoyable and most annoying.
Maybe I should start that off, I guess. I don't know. Jared's just snickering and staring at me because I think we both maybe had the same thought. So I mentioned in passing that I have a jam going currently for the Tension Engine at large, and So along with Honorbound, both of us are actually working on our own projects for that jam. And so I was working on some of that, and I was working on the layout for the most recent Kickstarter I've done, Lord of Terror, which was, in short, it's taking my one-page solo system and trying to expand it out into a great big multi-chapter dungeon crawler. But a one-page solo game, you might guess, includes a lot of tables. And exponentially more whenever you expand it out. And so I commented the other day in the Discord chat that tables are going to be the death of me trying to lay them out in Affinity. And so I'm snickering when you say one of the worst things about Honorbound. It's gonna have some tables. So I think actual layout is gonna be a little bit of a bear. But I think I'm learning a lot more. Some of my early releases under Gaminomicon, I had a buddy who does graphic design as a profession, help out on that stuff. So it's a skill I've been trying to work on and learn a bit more. As far as favorite thing goes, that's trickier. It's harder to narrow down. I think this may sound kind of weird, but I think one of my favorite parts has been when Jared and I do get into a call directly, and we can spitball and kick things back and forth. And I swear more gets done in half an hour of that than any other time. That's been a real highlight. Something about that conversation.
Oh, fair play.
Yeah.
To you then, Jared.
I totally agree with Will there. Like my favorite part is during the playtesting stuff. Seeing it in action and seeing the players react to the world that they're helping build. There is this awesome moment where two players got separated from the third player, and the two players basically had to wait, just sit there. That was their job, was to sit there while one person finished up the scene. Well, the players introduced their own background stories, which is, you know, experience points for doing. And they just introduced it like, oh, someone from my past came out. And it turned into this super tense, like, Old West gunslinger showdown scene. Like, out of the blue that none of us had planned for, that had implications with the plot of the adventure, like how they wound it in. And just seeing that organically happen for something that I wasn't quite sure whether we should have that included in the game, and see it work was awesome. It was so rewarding to see that come into play. And then the worst part, or the hardest part, is the imposter syndrome, like 100%. Like, I don't, you know, I've only been doing this for about 3 years. Now I've been gaming for almost 40, but, you know, it's the whole idea that never quite good enough. I have an English major, and I still am just like, oh, this is all terrible. It's not going to quite work. It's not, it's like these things are going to fall apart or whatever. And it's just the natural progression. I don't know if I know of anyone who does any sort of creative endeavor that doesn't have the imposter syndrome. And just at times, it's just worse than others. And it's probably my least favorite part of this, where I'm like, oh, it's just a waste of time. I need to be doing something else, you know?
I think that's one quite a lot of people have, really. I think it's good that you can get over it, though. You know, it's something you can push through. So I take it you're going to kickstart with this. What kind of goals, if you're allowed to talk to about it now, or have you not decided, kind of thing like stretch goals, overall goals, what's the kind of plan with that then?
I guess maybe I'll start on that one, since I've been doing the Kickstarter stuff. Yeah. So we're gonna run that through Gaminomicon as well, which If folks look that account up on Kickstarter, we've had a few already. So we want to kind of keep that momentum going for it to be published under that banner. We have not finalized budgets or add-ons or stretch goals or anything, but some of the broad strokes we've been talking about that we have plugged in there. We've been, of course, like Jared mentioned, our page count shooting for 60-ish pages to keep it about the same size as Twilight War that we did for Party First. So I think that probably puts our budget in a similar realm. Off the top of my head, I should have double-checked. I think the goal for Twilight War was 2,000 US, and I think it finished at maybe 3,500. Something like that. Oh, Jared's got notes here, I think. So I think we're looking at that. That probably puts it in line with some of the others I've run, like Warmer in the Winter and the like. So some kind of smaller thousands will still let us get it published and out into people's hands. For stretch goals and the like, we've kind of insinuated heavily that there's enough content out there that it's not far away from having a second book ready. So we've been talking about that. Possibly if we can, say, double our goal, for that to maybe be a stretch right there. I know we kind of kicked around some ideas before about... So if you look on Kickstarter, the landing page or holding page, whatever, for Honorbound is already up with a pretty simple, straightforward Starfield logo and all. But the kind of rocket ship fleur-de-lis design was an idea of Jared's that we kind of worked with. So we thought, oh man, would it be neat to get maybe like some custom D6s that had that symbol as the six face or something like that. So we're still kicking ideas around. If folks have ideas, hey, offer them up. We'll see what we can do.
I'm always a sucker for dice.
Here, let me get that on my notes here then.
And Matt over there is a sucker for special editions.
Yeah, pretty much. Ooh, special editions, like fancier bindings and that kind of thing.
Depends on how it looks, personally. For me, I'm very vain in how I like the look of things.
I mean,
totally understandable.
I don't see anything wrong with that, because in our original sit down for talking about our original goals, like that was the first thing we did. We sat down, what did we foresee? What did we want for our goals? And part of this was really talking about those stretch goals, which I didn't realize that's in actuality what we were talking about until like maybe a month ago. I'm like, oh, we actually kind of talked about this already. And like the idea is like, if we reach certain amounts, like we know what kind of art, and I know a couple of artists I would want to hire to be able to do it. Like what else did we have in here? A layout for a character sheet, both online and physical. Sigils for each of the species or species art for them. Like, we have a whole list of things. Like, if we can reach things in Kickstarter, this is what we'll just include in the book. And so, I've never participated in anything like this. Someone out there, please tell us if this is a terrible idea. But to base the idea of your Kickstarter going like, if we reach this, that means we get this. Like, we can pay for a person to do this. Like, if we make this much, then we can pay for a person to do this. Otherwise, it's just going to be us looking at, like, you know, art online. You know, I just did a bunch of it for the game I'm working on, like going through all the open license art and pictures and like trying to get it together. Yeah. Make sure you get all the right attributions to the right people. Like we're happy to do that, but it'd be way cooler if we had art from actual artists, that's for sure. So
remind me, I'll point you in the direction of a few that we know.
Yeah,
that sounds fantastic. Yeah.
Especially musicians as well. Music is always a good one.
Oh, now that's not something I've thought about that much, but that could be pretty sweet.
You slap that in front of an actual play?
It's easy to read.
Who was it, yeah. Matt, who had some campaign on Kickstarter we saw had a vinyl record as one of their...
That would be Cthulhu Dreamt.
Yeah, that was sick, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we met Reed. There's going to be, I think, two vinyls and a whole bunch of... different thing. The only other thing I can think of, if you go down the art route, prints...
Oh yeah, people love that.
Okay, that's pretty... That's much more straightforward than custom vinyls. I bet we could do that.
Oh, if you're doing the space thing too, it could be fun. This is... You know those, what is it, like, fictional travel posters, essentially?
Oh, yeah!
If you guys have, like, planets or, like, space stations or something... You could have that as a stretch goal.
Cool. Oh, a Grand Alliance recruiting poster. That could be cool.
Have I got room on the wall?
I do.
I mean, you got maps. I mean, depending on how far you want to go. I mean, I know there's some that do cloth maps.
Oh, tapestries. Mm. That's pricey. But hey, if you got like 10 times printed. Your goal, go for it.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Dream big.
Like,
VTT integration.
Our podcast, we obviously do it online and we're all around the world, so it's a roll 20 for us, never at an actual table.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Maybe
you've got
one day.
Foundry, you've got Alchemy, I think one of them is.
Yes, I've heard of that one. I normally only play in person, or I use it's pretty bare bones, but Fari RPG's tabletop, which is just very theater of the mind, you know, dice roller, pretty simple sort of thing. You been using any at all, Jared, for the playtest games? It's just raw Discord.
Yeah, because it is theater of the mind. You do raw Discord, and I was actually just going to get a copy of what I've been having people work with. Just be like, all right, well, this is what we used. It'll kind of give you an idea. It's like a character keeper online, an unprofessional one, so it's not great. But you can take a look at that. Kind of gives you an idea of what we're working with. Otherwise, because that's just the characters, and then the rest of it is just... theater of the mind.
Fair enough.
Need to request access for that, apparently. Oh. There you go.
So while they're sorting that out, I'd say full VTT integration would be super cool. That is not something I've really looked into before, but I think we'd be happy to explore it. And of course, raises the question, I guess, do we need to look at that relatively soon to sort out a playtest game with you guys?
To be fair, I'd say we just use Roll20 for dice rolls. If there isn't already a system online for it, it's really easy, just dice rolls. We tend to end up having a new page for each one, and
I think we're at 6
the
now?
Artwork that we end up doodling throughout the entire thing.
Crew down here.
It makes it kind of good. Hey, I'll pull one up.
Oh, was it in that season Valhalla one that got absolutely out of
hand? Okay, if you want to ask the next question, Jay,
before we go too far off. Completely off track. So, what advice would you give to people wanting to make their own TTRPGs? Or even their own system?
I think I might... I can launch off with this one. I think the first thing I would say is do it. That sounds fairly condescending, but honestly, for me, that was the biggest part, because I was so afraid of accidentally creating something that someone else has already done, and I'm just retreading old ground. Like, I was afraid of redoing a system. I was afraid of redoing the environments, the settings, the everything. It was the scared part. That was the hardest part for me. Just like, it's already been done. Why would I even contribute to this? The entry point to do this is at the lowest point it's ever been for role-playing games. Doesn't mean you're going to get good role-playing games, but once you start getting into the research of doing it, looking at stuff, you're going to find stuff that you really like. You're going to find stuff that you want to copy. You're going to find stuff that you think, you know what, this would be great if you did this instead. Just put pen to paper or start typing or whatever. For me, to organize it, I do a Google Docs and a Google Sheet. The Google Sheet, I end up with like 45 tabs by the time I'm done. Like, this sheet's for mechanics, this is for world building, this is for professions, this is for species, and just like keep doing that. And once I get to a critical mass, I take that information and then just start typing it all out on a Google Doc. And it doesn't have to be organized right away. Just start typing. Just start typing, and then by then you'll be good to go. Oh no!
What happened there?
I don't know! Just told me it disconnected.
Oof, that was rough.
What happened there?
I was wondering if my internet had gone out.
Yes. Because
all of you guys stopped.
Yeah, same here. That's a first.
I think someone's trying to tell us something.
Yeah, that's all the secrets getting out. You're going to see a red dot appear on everyone's cams.
And this is why we record individually locally, because this shit happens.
That would have killed it, yeah.
So that's my advice.
I'll just nod and say, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Absolutely.
Oh,
we got
lost
in it.
Well, the funny thing is, because you recorded that locally, it'll sound perfectly fine. Everyone would just be like, what the fuck are they on about?
Oh, man.
How about you, Will?
That's the first Discord.
For me, honestly, I think I'm going to reiterate what we were saying earlier about jams to some extent, and particularly the one page jam, because I think if anyone is looking to get started, to make their own game, to kind of get over that hump of feeling accomplished and to combat that imposter syndrome that Jared said, it does not get any more achievable than a one page game, really. And I would also really recommend, kind of related to that, there's a ton of SRDs available out there, system resource documents, that are virtually all open licensed for you to do pretty much whatever you want with. You can find them all over the place on Itch. The one page jam links to several, you know, Lasers and Feelings and What Everyone Is John and Honey Heist and the Second Guess, and all sorts of stuff.
Honey Heist.
Yeah.
Why does that ring a bell?
Honey Heist, the base game is about bears going to a convention, and they've got two stats, bear and
bear and honey. This was
bear and honey. Yeah. Yeah, and you you have to pick out the hat your bear's wearing.
Yeah, way back when I mentioned at the start of this, someone else had mentioned one day jams. It was bear and honey. That's what they mentioned.
Yeah.
We were talking to them, whoever it was, we were talking about their inspirations, and they were like, oh, bear and honey. From the one day jam.
Mmm. And I must admit, you just answered a question I've had for a while. What was an SRD?
Oh. Well, I apologize that I didn't clarify that earlier. So yeah, system resource document. So a lot of those, a good chunk of the heavy lifting has been done for you. Most of them, you can just straight up reuse the text from them. So I think that moves the bar even lower for you to hurdle, so to speak. Just take them and tweak a handful of things. If you've got a world that sounds interesting, throw some flavor to go with the base rules. You know, and any little thing like that to help you over that initial creation hump. I think later projects get easier and easier the more of them you have under your belt. So don't be afraid to start small and just make each one a little bit bigger.
I think the only other thing we really need to ask before we wrap this up is, where can people find you and Onabound?
home address, please. If you will.
Oh, man. This is when I really should have gotten a P.O. box, I think. You can find me hiding deep in the Ozark Mountains. Or virtually any of the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, and so on, as Gamonomicon. Again, it's trickier to spell than I thought, so it's Game Anomicon, like Necronomicon. You just cut off Necro at the beginning and replace it with Game. And of course, you can find under Game Anomicon as well on Kickstarter, but you should be able to search Honor Bound and find the landing page for Honor Bound there on Kickstarter. I probably should have had a Tiny Earl prepped that I could just rattle off right now for everybody, but it'll take a search.
I'll stick it in description.
Perfect. And oh, and of course, you can find Game Anomicon on Itch and Drive-Thru RPG as well, or my own name, Will Lentz, will lead you there.
He's got a website too.
that I should update more often. I tend not to mention it because I've gotten out of the habit of updating it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I just spent the $150, $200 or whatever to keep the landing page or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. I haven't updated this like in 6 months. Why am I paying for this? I'm Jared Leopold. You can find most of my stuff under just my name. One nice thing about having a name that's spelled slightly different is that you can find me under Leopold, L-E-U-P-O-L-D. And you can find my stuff on Itch. You can also find it on RPG Drive-Thru. If you can't find it under Jared Leopold, you can find it under Proxism by Design. Just try and look for Jared Leopold first. You can find it like on YouTubes, and then that has all the links to my website and all that other stuff.
Yeah, nice one. Well, thank you very much for your time, lads. It's been an absolute honor talking to you both. And yeah, I think that's kind of it for us. This has been a Pint of Cthulhu, signing off.
Bye.
And now we hit the square stop button on Audacity.